In 1986, with money he'd saved up from his bar mitzvah, Michael Dorff moved from Wisconsin to New York, where he opened a bar and performance space. Although it began as a hole in the wall, the Knitting Factory became one of the city's most influential clubs. In the 25 years since, Mr. Dorff has become a nightclub impresario, entrepreneur, and philanthropist. He opened City Winery, a restaurant and club, on New Year's Eve in 2008, where he presents top name artists and also makes wine. In 2006, Mr. Dorff created an annual series of tribute concerts to raise money for music education for underserved youth. And next week, as part of this effort, a diverse group of artists will perform songs from the Rolling Stones' Hot Rocks 1964-71, the band's biggest-selling album, at Carnegie Hall. One of those artists, the great Ronnie Spector, joins Michael Dorff on our show now, and I'm very pleased to welcome you both.
Oh, thank you.
Michael, you're a busy man, hosting two tribute concerts in 2 weeks. On top of the Stones tribute, aren't you putting on a show tonight at the Apollo?
Yeah, it's a Robert Johnson tribute in honor of his 100th birthday, and it's an amazing lineup.
Yeah,
it's a good show. Elvis Costello and Macy Gray and Keb Mo.
I was there with Macy Gray this summer. And Lou Reed, all those, and I was there too. It was called Harlem Festival Jazz Night. I'm not jazz, but I sang song. Well, I sang it amateur night at the Apollo when I was 11.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that with your cousin doing the lead, and then he froze, and you had to take over?
I took over because my parents said, this is it for you, kid.
Were you called Ronnie and the Relatives at that time?
Huh?
Is that before you became Ronnie and the Relatives?
Oh, yeah, at 11? Are you kidding? I was like, my parents were saying to me, you can't keep messing up in school and singing to the class because they're enjoying it. They would call my mother and father. So it's either you sing great. So my mother and father made an ultimatum. You go to the Apollo. You know, it was amateur night. And if you go over, we won't, you know, bother you with your homework so much.
This was during the doo-wop era. You want to sound like Frankie Lyman and the teenagers.
Frankie was my idol, my inspiration. His voice, I would come home at night because my parents couldn't afford to send me to piano lessons and vocal lessons. So I'd come home and listen to Frankie Lyman and the teenagers, the students, and the schoolboys. Those are my favorites.
Now, Michael, you've presented tributes to a number of artists who cover a wide range of styles: Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Elton John, Neil Sedaka.
What determines
who you're going to celebrate?
It's just a fun opportunity to take a seminal songwriter and then have even more fun and find 20, 21 of my favorite artists to interpret those songs in a show. So I'm a kid in a candy bar.
Well,
in
your case, Ronnie, you go back a long way with the Rolling Stones. Before they were famous, you were the more famous one at the time.
They were my opening act, and that was over in London. But I'm telling you, so was Eric Clapton and the Yardbirds, the Swinging Blue Jeans. We had so many first acts before we came out. But I'm telling you, that was the best time ever in my career with the Stones and all those people. I mean, the Rolling Stones. I remember, if I can tell you a short story, we were on the bus. Then we got stuck on the bus because it was all this fog, so we couldn't move. So
when London still had all
this
fog.
So what happened was Keith and I saw a light over there, and it was a house. So we go over to the house. We knock on the door. I said, hi, I'm Ronnie Spector of the Ronettes. I was Inspector then.
You're Ronnie Bennett.
Yes. And I've said Spector so long. And I said, and Keith said, and I'm Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, and we're stuck with our bus because, and we're hungry. And the lady, not like today, in the 60s, they loved you. They let you in. She gave us a whole bunch of scones for the band because we could not move, and we were all starving. So Keith and I, and we're still today, we live 15 minutes apart, so we're very, very close.
Well, he wrote in his recent autobiography that you represented the first time he went to heaven, so you obviously...
We didn't have sex, if that was what you're going to say.
I wasn't going to say that at all, but I just was, I was going to ask, are you as fond of him as he seems to have been of you?
Yeah, of course. I see him all the time.
And your mother met him and Mick as well?
Well, my mother, when they came to America without money, so they slept on my living room floor, and we had shag carpets in those days, and it was Keith and Mick, and we took them to the Apollo Theater because Mick Jagger was the biggest James Brown nut I ever met. You know, so we took, because we had just headlined there. So it was easy for us to just go there and go in backstage. And James Brown came walking by. I thought Mick Jagger was going to have a heart attack. He went, you know, and then Mick Jagger, I said, this is Keith and Mick, and he said, hi, and he boogalooed on by, you know, so you, he didn't, they weren't famous yet. And then they went back to England, and they listened to me a little bit. They made, they put, I said, wear your hair longer, because you have to, when I was with the Ronettes, we had to be different, not better, just different. So what we did, we put the Chinese slits up the side so we could dance real good, and, you know, the hair up the beehives and stuff.
And
so,
Amy Winehouse has paid tribute to you.
I know.
By wearing her hair like that.
I know.
Is that something you felt complimented by?
Well, of course.
She was such a talent.
Anybody that compliments you by wearing your hairstyle or your look, that's such a compliment. And we were over in England last year. She actually came to my show, and she was standing behind this real tall guy, and she would peek out at me. So when I was singing her song, Back to Black, she started crying, and then it made me cry. I said, I can't do that. I got another song to do. But I loved her, and she loved me.
Well, Keith inducted the Ronettes into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame
yes,
in 2007.
Did.
So,
yes.
in a way, you're returning the favor here tonight,
right.
Next week.
That's right.
At Carnegie.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, what led you to start these tribute concerts?
It started when I was asked by a nonprofit to write a check for some important music education programs, and I don't have enough money in my account to have the check mean anything. And I did what was natural to me, which was say I'd like to put on a show. And that was the Joni Mitchell show, actually, in 04 at Carnegie. And we've had pretty much 8 sellouts ever since. We've raised about $700,000 net for about 9 different organizations.
But mostly music education.
All music education,
that's what
but
I
different,
love the most.
Different organizations from Mr. Holland's Opus, which is well known, to a program we just actually helped launch with Young Audiences New York called Fix, which is about all these instruments that are in closets gathering dust that they can then fix. And so it's really going to very important causes.
Well, it used to be there was a time when the public schools took care of a lot of this. I once asked the great drummer Chico Hamilton about why so many great jazz musicians came from Los Angeles around 1940. Charles Mingus, Buddy Collette, Dexter Gordon, Wardell Gray, Teddy Edwards. And he said it was because learning how to play an instrument was a requirement in the schools. Otherwise, those great players might have done something other than find themselves in music.
Yeah. There are studies that show that it helps in math and keeps kids in school. And there's a lot of reasons that music programming. And sadly, it's the first thing to get cut when there's budget problems.
Now, you said, Ronnie, you learned by listening to records, but your sister, Estelle, studied at Star Time, didn't she? Was she one of the
Star Time kids? No, she was at Fashion Institute of Technology. But she wasn't – see, I was like – I wanted it so badly. And in those days, it was girl groups. So that's when my cousin, Nedra, my first cousin, and my sister, we all formed that group. But we had sang before with my little cousin Ira and my cousin Diane and Elaine, and we sang in the lobby of my grandmother's house because we weren't allowed to go out in Spanish Harlem. So we had to stay in the lobby. And that's when I was 11, that's when I knew I could sing because the lobby was so tall, you know. I said, wow, I can sing.
And the echoes were natural echoes, not
yeah,
like we're doing today.
I know, I loved it.
My guests are Ronnie Spector and Michael Dorff, and we're talking about a tribute concert to the Rolling Stones' Hot Rocks album, 1964-71.
March 13th.
At Carnegie Hall.
CarnegieStones.com.
That's right.
We'll take a little break, and we'll come back, and you can give all that information and other things.
Yeah.
Right after this. Yes, that's Veronica Bennett, actually better known as Ronnie Spector.
Thank you.
She is one of the artists who will appear in the Rolling Stones Hot Rocks 1964-71 tribute that was organized by Michael Dorf. It's next week, March 13th. At Carnegie Hall. And Michael, who else is on the lineup?
It's an incredible lineup. Art Garfunkel, the Carolina Chocolate Drops, David Johansen from New York Dolls, Glenn Hansard of Swell Season, Gomez, Ian Hunter, Jackson Brown, Jackson Green, Juliette Lewis, Mark Cohn,
wow.
Peaches, Marianne Faithfull,
what?
Rich Robinson of the Black Crowes, Ricky Lee Jones.
They only told me a few was going to be there.
There's Ronnie Spector, of course. Roseanne Cash, Steve Earle, Taj Mahal, and the Mountain Goats. So an incredible
Some
lineup.
Of those people I would immediately connect to the Rolling Stones. Others, less so.
Right.
So,
me too.
My favorite thing is the interpretation of these
classics. I mean, why Marianne Faithfull? She has no connection to the Rolling Stones.
And what song do you guess that she will do?
What?
As one Tears of Go By.
Songs. Yeah.
I mean, so some things were obvious. Some things were a little plug and play, and it was a lot of fun. We're doing the Hot Rocks collection from start to finish, exactly the way
it's
we
so
all listen
great.
To it in
and,
that order.
And you know what they told me, because it's such a great idea. Since the Rolling Stones opened for me, I'm going to open for them. And it's like a story, you know. It's so great to open for them because how they opened for me over in England. And then came to America.
Now, do you have a backup group these days? Or
of course. I have my own band, 8-piece band. I have 2 girl singers. We go all over the world.
Well, you also were great dancers.
Yeah.
Now, I always thought that you started as dancers, although...
Well, we were because we were called Murray the K's Beautiful Dancing Girls before we got a hit record and all that stuff. So we were called the Dancing Girls at one point. And then, of course, we always had the name the Ronettes. But he would say, the beautiful dancing girls, because we did dance, because nobody else did what the Ronettes did. You know, we were just so different because, you know, we were half-breeds anyway. My father's white, my mother's black and Indian. Nedra's father's Spanish, and my mother and her mother are sisters. So it comes from a very close-knit family and stuff. And I just love the way I grew up. I love being in Spanish Harlem. People didn't know. The Spanish girls didn't speak to me because I couldn't speak Spanish. The white girls knew I wasn't black, and the black girls knew I wasn't black. So one day I went in the mirror, what am I? Is my nose? You know, because you don't know what you are because I had such a mixed family, you know.
Well, I still think the name of the group at one point, Ronnie and the Relatives, was a really good name.
You did. That would have meant I would have had to have every relative.
You think that would have been a hit group?
I had 14... aunts and aunts and uncles, 7 aunts and 7 uncles. So that's why they first started with Ronnie and the Relatives, because I was one of those kids that wanted to sing on the coffee table at my grandmother's, and I just, at 5.
Well, Michael, I began by saying that you took your bar mitzvah money and opened the knitting factory. Obviously, there was a big gap between the bar mitzvah and the knitting factory.
Yes,
had
yes.
you put it away for a rainy day?
I did, and I think the bar mitzvah actually only accumulated about half. And then I came to New York with about $20,000 at the time and was able to get this thing built with a couple friends.
And what did your family think? I hear your mother cried your apartment
that's
and house.
That's the story. Well, they thought I had lost my mind. I dropped out of law school. I wanted to be in the music business.
Yeah.
I rented this space. I moved into the back. I went to Pineapple Fitness around the corner to shower, you know, for $39 a month.
And, oh, wow.
And had a futon under the desk for a couple of years. So it was certainly not what they envisioned their nice Jewish boy from Wisconsin doing.
Speaking
in New York.
Of Jewish boys, that's where we started out. All the bar mitzvah boys wanted to run it.
Wait, Ronnie, you're a Jewish boy?
No, I 17 years, I'm Jewish. Both of my husbands were Jewish, or my other husband, he is Jewish. And
we don't talk about the first husband.
No, but I'm talking about, right, ugh, but I'm talking about...
The
bar mitzvahs. That's how we started.
I've been thinking, should I talk about that first? Nah, I'm not going to talk about that
No,
first
please
husband.
Don't. He's awful. I don't mean to say awful, but I do mean to say
That's
awful.
Okay. You're not the only one who said that, right?
I know.
So, okay, so you opened up the Knitting Factory, and how did it turn out to be such a success so quickly?
Yeah. I think it was a lot of luck. There's no question about it. It was a good space for what was the scene at the time. The jazz community embraced it. The alternative rock community embraced it. And the community that didn't have a name. You know, what people were calling downtown music, John Zorn and Mark Rebo. And there were so many of these artists that couldn't classify themselves. And we were wide open to having anything happen.
You remember the Peppermint Lounge? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Joey D? Okay,
yeah,
that's where we started, too.
Jim Furat, I remember trying to get him demo tapes of the bands that I was representing.
Oh, you're kidding.
Having tried booking bands at some of these other places, I knew what the deals were. And so then I think I made just a very fair deal, and everyone came in.
But then why did you leave the Knitting Factory?
I left in 02 to 03 after 9/11. I wanted to do something a little more meaningful in my life. I had just had a chance to make a barrel of wine in California, and that was so much fun. I couldn't convince my family to move out to wine country, so I thought I'd bring a little wine country into Manhattan and combine it with what I know how to do, which is put on a show.
It's great. I love the wine. We worked there at the wine.
I know.
I loved it.
The City Winery is actually right across the street from our
studios. Thank you.
But it's an interesting place because you have a stage and you have regular performances. But then you also see all these barrels and vats.
The idea was to bring wine country into the city and really create a better mousetrap, if you will, for the patrons and the artists to have that moment of culture. And I see wine as a bit of culture, and to combine them all in one place was unique and something that an audience that's been aging and looking for a place that they can sit and see a show, drink wine out of a glass, not a plastic cup, there is something sophisticated, mature about that environment. That's why we're opening in Chicago this summer, and I hope to keep expanding.
Great. Wow.
Now, I mentioned Amy Winehouse being influenced by you, but you've influenced a host of bands and singers, Ronnie. But your relationship with Joey Ramone seemed especially close. Mm-hmm. What was it about him that you admired?
He was so genuine, Joey. When I did Don't Worry Baby and She Talks to Rainbows, he was so ill that he had to come up to Daniel Ray's apartment, and he had a booth in there and, you know, to record. And I felt so bad because he had to eat special food. So Joey Ramone would come in and have his little package, a little brown package of his food. And he didn't want anything but me before he died on his records, my voice. So I would go up to Daniel Ray's house. He lived on 11th Street. And I just stayed there.
He had a recording studio there?
Yeah, in the house, because Joey lived right across the street, so he could walk across the street, but he couldn't do anything else. And I also remember Keith Richards was on my record, Last of the Rock Stars, and Joey said, "That's between you and Keith Richards, I've got to come." I said, "You sure you're okay?" He said, "I'm fine." He came there, and he was like in a trance, because Keith and I were in the, you know, out and singing, and he was playing the guitar and singing with me. I remember looking at Joey Ramone. His eyes were like, he was like in a trance. 2 weeks later, he died. And I was devastated. But he wanted to see Keith Richards and Ronnie Spector together. So I made that wish come true. Called Keith. He said, "Of course I'll be down there. You don't have to pay me nothing. I'll be right there, Ronnie." So he said, "I'm paying you back for sleeping on the floor and your mother coming in asking us if we want bacon and eggs." So, you know, we go back 45 years.
Now, did you ask the Stones if they would join this concert?
My fingers are remaining crossed. You know, when Bruce Springsteen jumped on stage,
I was there.
That was an incredible moment.
Wasn't it? And when he watched everybody sing his song.
Absolutely.
And then Bruce Springsteen came up at the end, and it was fabulous. I love that.
Yeah, and REM has come to their tribute, and Simon and Garfunkel came to theirs in Central Park. And so I've been in touch, and...
Hopefully my
fingers are crossed.
Well, you know, Mick and Keith.
I think one of them will be there. Is my guess.
I kind of have a feeling that Keith will be there.
Well,
because he loves the way I sing, and may as well say what song I'm doing. Time is on my side, and it's, I guess, because of my age. I've been in the business so long, and I still haven't been able to get over that hurdle with my ex and music and all that stuff that he owns. So I haven't been able to get any of my
stuff. That's not resolved, even though he's in jail?
Mm-hmm. You remember Gotti and all those people? They were like mobsters. yet they took orders from jail. They would do what they had to do. So I don't know if it's him. I don't know the situation out there, but I do know they're doing a movie, a HBO movie about his life. And I just couldn't understand because, of course, I'm making one. So he jumped the gun. Or they say it's from the courts, all the stuff. But he's putting all his songs in it. And I've been waiting for years to get, you know, rights to my song.
He has to give you permission to sing the songs
my
that
own
you made
songs.
Famous.
Isn't that something? And it's like, if you knew how hard I worked in Gold Star in California, because even Phil was based in New York. When he heard my voice, I'm taking her. And the other two Ronettes didn't go. It was just me. And in the studio, that's when I fell in love with him, watching him move. And it was funny because all these men were older than him. You know, Hal Blaine, Glenn Campbell, all these people were older than him. And I think that attracted me to him. And I really did fall in love. Some people say, oh, you didn't really love him and this and that. I love that guy so much. I love the way he produced. I loved his writing. And he loved my voice.
And he was a musical genius.
Yes.
Alas,
I don't take things
away from people. A
troubled person.
Yeah.
Very troubled, but...
But we weren't going to talk about Phil. But
back then, he wasn't.
I'm enjoying
it. I'm glad
we
didn't talk about Phil. We've run out of time, unfortunately, but I'm reminded that tickets to both of the tributes that Michael Dorff is involved with are on our show page at WNYC.org.
I think there's just a couple left for tonight and less than 50 left for the Carnegie show. So we're very close to both selling out.
Wow.
But if to some lucky listeners.
Keep trying.
Yeah, I did a couple of shows about the Carnegie Hall. March 13th, Mark Simone, I was on his show, and I talked about it.
Well, thank you.
So I always come out and talk about shows for people to come see them.
We love that.
We won't
fan,
be
Michael.
Around long. It's like I think of the Stones. We got to do our stuff now, you know, now or never.
Bring my guests are Ronnie Spector and Michael Dorff. Thank you so much for being on our show.
You're so welcome.
Much.